you, Philip. Philip does a good job leading singing, doesn't he? He's an English teacher. You'd never know that, would you? And he's a good teacher. And appreciate Philip a lot. I think he just left. He's getting in his car leaving. So appreciate him coming to lead and singing tonight and being with us for at least the first few minutes. Hey, thank you all for being here. You know, this is a great turnout for a Monday night. And really appreciate y'all. Thank you for being here. And, man, and folks from Lee County, thank y'all for being here. And, man, so I have so many friends, and they start out to be, hey, good to have you back, Philip. And they start out to be friends anyway, and then, you know, they're like Farron, you know. And I love Farron. It's funny, what we're teasing about is he did give me this really glowing introduction yesterday morning, and then last night he finished leading singing and went, Brother Harold. I was like, get on up here, you know. Oh, y'all, a couple of, not many months ago, I flew to Florida. My mom, 85 years old, was moving from her house that she's been in for 50 years. And she was going into a kind of an assisted living kind of a situation where she was going to have a little apartment and get fed three meals a day. And, you know, it was really a nice situation for her. And she was having to sell her house and go into this. And it was a decision she's made. She's been in this house, like I say, 50 years. My dad's been gone 22 years. And she's been by herself for a long time. My sisters live in where she lives in West Palm. My brother just retired from the sheriff's department down there, and he has a home in Palm Bay, Florida, also a home in Tennessee. And so he's kind of back and forth, goes back and forth. And we moved my mom, in the process of moving my mom, flew down there, and I said, listen, I've got 2 days, and we're going to get it done in 2 days. And you can see by just looking at me, my powerful upper body, it really wasn't a joke. And it was. So I really wanted to get it done and said, hey, listen, we're going to rent a truck. We're going to get all this furniture moved. We're going to get it done and get mom. And that way she didn't have to worry about any of this. And in the process of doing this, my mom had a total meltdown, bless her heart. And as you can imagine, you know, she was holding on to sheets, a bunch of sheets from the bed. And she came out and announced to all of us who had packages in our hands and had sweat rolling down our, you know, faces, paid money to fly down there and help for 2 days. She announced that she was not moving, and she could not move because the sheets were not clean. And my sister freaked out on her and yelled at her, and rarely happens. And my other sister yelled at her. And then my brother, the policeman, of course, he's going to step in and, you know, try to take care of everything. You know, you get on that side of the room, you go, Mom, be quiet, get over there, you know. And then, of course, the preacher, I'm going to take care of everything, right? You know, I'm going to calm the situation. I told everybody to shut up. I told everybody to go to a different room. I was sick of all of them. And it dawned on me, y'all, in the process of all of us freaking out for those, you know, 5 minutes, I thought, I wonder if the people that I've been preaching for 28 years, my friends, if they knew kind of how crazy my family would they still like me? You know, would they still respect me? Not that they do all that much, but would they judge me differently or look at me differently? And it dawned on me that all of us, and I mean all of us, have family issues. We all have imperfections. Over the years, I can't tell you how many people I have preached to and counseled with and talked to that somehow they think they have to be perfect in order for God to use them. If that is the case, God could use no one. You read, and you have, the New Testament and the Old Testament, a group of people that are about as imperfect and dysfunctional as a group of people you'll ever find. And I'm just going to take a segment tonight, just for a few minutes, and I promise you this won't take long, but I'm just going to take a segment just for a few minutes out of the book of Genesis. So if you have your Bible, I want you to turn to Genesis, right around Genesis 27, 28, 29, 30, 31. I'm not, obviously, for the sake of time, I'm not going to be able to read all of these verses. You're familiar probably with the story, most of you are. If you're not, then I want you to go back and read the story in its totality. It is the story basically that revolves around Jacob, and I will explain to you the lineage of that and the man Jacob, who he is, who he was, and what he will eventually become. I wrote this down many years ago, and it said someone once said that families are a lot like fudge. They're mostly sweet, sprinkled with some nuts. And I think that is so true. I love the story that a friend of mine told me about a little girl that went to her mom and said, "Mom, where did human beings come from?" And she said, "Honey, Adam and Eve, God made Adam and Eve. And Adam and Eve had kids, and they had kids, and that's how the human race began. Is there were these families came from the creation of God." And she went to her father, and she said, "Daddy, where do human beings come from?" And he said, "Honey, we all come from monkeys. We evolved. There was a monkey, some apes. They got together, and eventually they became human beings." And she went back to her mom, and she said, "Listen, you guys got to get on the same page. You say that humans come from God, and Dad says human comes from monkeys." And she said, "Oh, honey, your daddy's talking about his side of the family. I was talking about my side of the family." Now, this is true, is it not? You can't choose your family. You can't choose your, for the most part, you can't choose your family. But you can choose how you grow up in that family, how you respond to them, what you do with all this information that you have, you know, growing up. And with that, we'll look at a term that's been used since the 1960s. You heard the term dysfunctional, you know, and it's a simple term. Some people are just so angry if you use that term. So let me straighten something out real quick. It does not function. Something that is dysfunctional is not functioning like it intended to function. Are you following me? So God created us, and He made us, and we are fearfully and wonderfully made. But because of sin, and all of us sin and fall short of the glory of God, because of sin in this world, we all do not function as God intended us to function. Are you following me? And so all of us, in a sense, have this dysfunction. And a lot of times we read the Bible, and folks, these are heroes of the faith. These are heroes. In fact, their names are written in Hebrews chapter 11, we call it the Hall of Faith. They're in the Hall of Faith. These are heroes of the Bible. You're talking about a group of imperfect, dysfunctional people that God somehow used. You'll see it in the story of Laban. So in Genesis chapter 31, we're gonna look at this particular family. I mentioned it starts somewhere in Genesis chapter 27, goes all the way to chapter 33. The story of Jacob, the story of his wives, Rachel and Leah, his father-in-law by the name of Laban, and many others in this story. So I'll start with a very simple, basic statement and just say this, and that is that every family is dysfunctional, that all of us are dysfunctional. I don't apologize for that statement. I aim to explain it in a little bit more detail tonight. But Jacob, the one that we're going to read about tonight, comes from an extremely dysfunctional group of people, as you'll see. Now, in my study of this and in kind of researching this after my epiphany in the house as my mom held sheets, which, by the way, something kind of funny as I look back on that, she couldn't move because the sheets were not clean. And so my sister that was yelling at her was yelling, "Well, go put them in the washer then." So my mom put them in the washer. But my brother, the policeman, decided to check on it, and the washer wasn't even going. There wasn't even water in it. I'm not sure it was even plugged in at the time. And so Jacob comes from this dysfunctional family, and he marries into, are you ready for this, another dysfunctional family. So in my research of all of this, they're like two peas in a pod. In fact, Dysfunctional people attract, like one scholar said, as magnets to dysfunctional magnets to one another, as because in some ways we all are. Now, Jacob's granddaddy was, do you remember, Abraham. His grandpa was Abraham. I don't know if you're grandpa. I'm a papa. And Kay and I love being grandparents, and we have the most wonderful grandchildren in all the world. No one's can even come close to them. All right, let's just get that straightened. And I saw a man on a cruise ship, and it said, world's greatest papa, and he and I just about got in a fight because I told him, no, that's not true. I've got a shirt that says I'm a papa, and you can't be that. But Jacob had a papa, and his name was Abraham. Abraham, if you'll recall, did what? He told lies about his wives. That's exactly right. Twice, he lies about his wife. Something, by the way, that he passes on to his son, and Isaac, and who lied about his wife later on. Isaac marries a woman named Rebekah. I think it's one of my favorite stories, y'all, to preach on and to teach on. Because remember, Abraham gets a servant to go and find his son Isaac a wife. And what I love about that is as he goes, remember he prays, and he's praying, Lord, help me to find this right woman. Help me to find the right person. I love one of the best things, I think, that comes out of the great principles, that as we work our day, as we live through our day, that's how what we ought to be doing. Pray, Lord, help me today. Help me in this situation. Help me find an open door. Help me have a conversation that will encourage someone. Tell me to speak a good word for you today. Here's a guy that prays, and he's praying all along about finding the right kind of person. And boy, that's something I was praying for when I came upon Kay. Sounded like it was pray. I saw her in a store, and she was selling clothing. And I bought a tie from her. And I came back the next day, and I bought a shirt from her. And I came back the next day, and I bought a suit from her. And I thought, this is getting kind of expensive. So I asked her out, and she said no. And she said, but I am going to go to church this Friday night. And if you'd like to go to church with me, you can come. It was my first introduction to the Church of Christ and to the gospel. Best date I ever had. And never regretted. And I appreciate her so much proposing to me and seeking me out and following me around, but I love that principle of just praying through all of it. So he's a good man, and he marries Rebekah. They have two children, as you know, Esau and Jacob, and they're really kind of off to a rough start. If you know the story, they are favored. One parent favors, the Bible tells us this, one parent favors one child over the other. We always say, hey, we don't have favorites. The Bible says these parents had favorites. So already there's this dysfunction with a mom having a favorite and a dad having a favorite. Well, he liked the outdoorsman. And mom liked, of course, the guy that stayed in the kitchen. And so Esau is the firstborn. He's the guy that likes to hunt. And of course, Jacob is Rebekah's favorite son. The Bible says he was a mild man. It is an interesting way of saying that he was kind of a mama's boy. He stayed at home and he cooked. Nothing wrong with that. But it started off poorly by favoritism. So God makes a prediction. In fact, he tells Isaac, if you remember this, he tells Isaac about these two boys, that the older one is going to serve the older one is going to serve the younger one, and that's culturally backwards, because then the older one would get the blessing, remember, and normally the younger one would serve the older one. But you remember that Isaac, for the most part, he would have already had a situation similar to this. He had a half brother, the name of Ishmael, who was pushed aside, who was older than he was, who was pushed aside, and Isaac would be the son of the promise. So Isaac tries everything he can to not let this happen. His wife is pregnant. They have twins, and the birth of Esau, of course, comes first. He's the firstborn. He has a lot of hair. Esau means hairy. Don't name your child Esau. Noah's a good, we have a little boy in this congregation. Noah's a good name. You know, Esau, you know, hey, look, here comes hairy. And but that's what it means. And hairy was born. And then twin number two comes out, Jacob. And as you know the story, he is holding on to the heel of his older brother as they come out of the womb. And it's almost a metaphor, grabbing hold. He would be a grabber or a supplanter, one who trips up another, and so they would name him by that. They would name him Jacob. So really it's a picture of their life and how this is going to happen. And one does the hunting, one does the cooking, and they grow up together. One comes in from the field, the older, who has been out. And he's hungry, and he says, man, what is that cooking? And his brother said, this is stew. And he said, well, you need to give me some of it. And he says, well, you give me your birthright, and I'll give you some stew. And so there is this exchange verbally. He didn't care at that time. All he wanted was something to eat. And there was an exchange of his birthright. And under that one condition, they kind of shake on it, if you will. So dad's now old. Isaac knows he doesn't have much time, and he calls his son Esau, his firstborn, in, and he tells him, listen, you go hunting, you bring back some game, and you cook me some meat, and I'm going to give you the family blessing. Rebecca is eavesdropping on this conversation, and she hears what's going on, and so because she has a favorite son, she goes and gets that favorite son, Jacob, and she says, listen, we got to deceive dad. You're going to have to put on some furry clothes and get hairy and get to where you smell like the outdoors, and when you come in, talk with a little lower voice, and we're going to trick dad because his eyesight is so bad, and we'll trick him into giving you the blessing. And so Esau, Jacob, complete opposites, totally different, both flawed. They actually pull it off. He takes the blessing, and the Bible, as you'll see, is 28-29. He runs away. He leaves, and that's not unusual in a dysfunctional family, and because people want to get away from it, they want to get away from the dysfunction, and they think if I can get away from this dysfunctional situation, I'll find some peace in my life. And what normally happens is they seek out, as you'll see Jacob does, some dysfunction of his own. And the problem is, y'all, unless we start being transformed from the inside out, like I preached about, redeemed by the grace and the glory of God, unless we're being transformed, our problem is wherever we go, we always bring us with us. With all of our junk, we bring it all along. It doesn't matter. Kay and I just got off a cruise, as you know, and we celebrated her birthday. And it is amazing to me that you could be out in the middle of the ocean and see the beauty that God created and have people serving you and waiting on you hand and foot and have people at the next table complaining and griping and seeing nothing good all around them. They have the blessing, just to be able to be there, they have the blessing of being out in all of this beauty. But the problem is they were the same at their house as they were on the cruise ship, as they will be next week, because they take themselves with them everywhere they go. And that's what Jacob does. Jacob takes his old surplanter deceiving self, and he meets his match in a man by the name of Laban. And in the process, of course, he meets the girl of his dreams. Now, I mentioned these guys are in the Hall of Faith. In Hebrews chapter 11, Jacob is mentioned in the Hall of Faith. By faith, Jacob, okay? In fact, when God speaks to Moses at the burning bush, he says, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is Jacob, who God used his name in the call of Moses to identify himself. This is one of the great men of all of the Bible, and he is a supplanter and a deceiver. But he meets the woman of his dreams, and he is going to marry her. And yet when he talks to Laban, Laban says, hey, listen, I'm glad you love her, and I'm glad you think so much of her, but you're going to have to work 7 years in order to have this woman. And so he does. In fact, I think one of the most romantic verses in all the Bible are found in the context of that. And those 7 years seem but a day to Jacob because he was in love, or because of the love that he had for her. Can you imagine? 7 years went by like a day. Man, he didn't mind because he was getting the girl up. Y'all go ahead and get that. Y'all just go ahead. I did a wedding not long ago, and the groom was standing here by me, and he looked down the aisle, and the bride walked in, and he said, wow. And he started sobbing. He was just so overwhelmed. I'm thinking, man, that's what you don't want to hear, uh-oh, you know, right? So all the way down the aisle, this guy, like, the closer she got, the more radiant she became. It was like unbelievable. And the more overwhelmed he was. Jacob was so in love, and it didn't mind working 7 years to have her. But you know the story. On their wedding night, old Laban pulls a switcheroo. He pulls Leah in, her sister, and she apparently isn't as attractive as her sister. But now, y'all, I have to explain this because I get asked this by every teenager. Apparently, they used a lot of veils in the Old Testament, okay? Somebody said, how can you go through a wedding night and wake up the next morning and go, uh-oh, I've made a terrible mistake. But there are a lot of there's a lot of veils going on there, and if you want to talk to me afterwards, I don't want to talk to you about it. So all I can say is the Bible reveals that he wakes up the next morning and he realizes he has married the wrong woman. And so now he has to work another 7 years, right, in order to have the woman that he is in love with. And so years have passed. Two wives later, two more concubine wives, by the way, and a whole bunch of kids, chapter 30, I think chapter 31, verse 1, we'll go there. That's probably a good place. And now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, that's his, you know, brother-in-law, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's as he acquired all of this wealth. And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and he saw his body language. He saw, you know, you can tell when someone is they're squaring up with you. You know, you can tell when someone folding their arms, the way looking at you. I know body language is deceptive, but obviously what he read is right. And you've got two deceivers, by the way. Jacob, who has deceived his brother out of his birthright, right? Actually, his father. And he's had with the help of his mother, you've got these two deceivers. Laban, who has deceived him. Two deceivers. They've spent time together. And now, as you would expect, they can't trust each other. And so there's a lot of false accusations going on. And Jacob is hearing this, and you'll see this. And so after leaving home and stealing the blessing, and he probably thought, listen, man, I'm glad to be out of that house. And here, all these years later, what does he find himself in but a terrible mess? I wrote this into my notes when I did this lesson. A study at Brown University, researchers said that many people hope that they once would leave home and they would leave their family and childhood problems behind. Many said they experienced similar problems as well as similar feelings and relationship patterns long after they left their own family environment. And the answer was because, again, wherever you go, you take you with you, all of you, all that formed you, all that shaped you, and all the stuff from your background that kind of follows you around that you eventually have to deal with. But I think the greater point in all of this is that all families are dysfunctional. that every human on this planet is dysfunctional. Every person has their own issues. They struggle with their own heartaches. They struggle with their own temptations. There is this common variety of temptation, no doubt about it, but all of us struggle it, and it's a three-letter word that affects all of us, and I mentioned at the beginning of this lesson, it's sin. One man's sin, death entered the world, Adam's sin, and death entered the world, and since that time, everyone is infected by this problem of dysfunction. And so, you know, we need to dispel this myth of this perfected family. One time our neighbors said to Kay, you're like the, what's that family that was on TV? You're like June Cleaver. That's what she said to Kay. You're like June Cleaver. Maybe Marge Simpson? No, I'm just kidding. No. And, you know, we thought, man, you know, again, when you only see us, they see us go to church, they see us taking care of our kids, they see us, at least they saw us as a nice family. But they saw us from kind of how we go visit places from a tourist point of view. Never lived in our house, never been around our house. They weren't there when Kay gets upset with me and I mess up. And so we need to dispel this myth, and we're broken and we're flawed. And y'all, even in God's family, the church, we are broken and flawed, and if we recognize that, we'll stop looking for this some kind of perfection in everybody. Would you? Their family just doesn't seem right. Well, guess what? Your family doesn't seem right either. What I found out, a lot of people that judge other people's families, is their family lived far away and nobody ever knew anything about them. That's what I found out. That's my theory, by the way, about that. Is their families lived three states over and nobody ever saw them and nobody ever heard them. So my kids grew up in the congregation. When we moved to Snellville, Larry was 5 and Shelley was 3. And they grew up in the middle of a congregation of people that judged everything they wore and judged everything they said in light of the fact that they were preachers' kids. And it's not that it's a big burden, and certainly I tell you what, Philip and Mandy have done a great job, and some of you have had to raise your family in that kind of environment, and they look for your family to have some kind of perfection that other families don't have. We're all imperfect. And so we need to dispel this myth, and I'm telling y'all, if we'll do this, we will put, I think, visitors at ease that somehow think they've got to come in with some kind of perfection in their life before they're ever be accepted into the body of Christ. Jesus, when you think of the people that he chose to be his followers, they were some messed up people. And they were cheaters. And you talk about a group of people that were rough and that would literally end up shaping the world. They were dysfunctional. And so we see it here. In 1 Corinthians, Paul's writing about all the problems they're having in the church, remember? And he's talking about their gluttons during the Lord's Supper. There's even a man that has his father's wife, and there's a relationship going on there. Man, when you read 1 Corinthians, you're thinking, what a messed up group of people. He's talking to the church. He's not talking to the community. And so there's this dysfunction. J.I. Packer once said, we are all invalids in God's hospital. I love that. It's the truth. Well, the second thing, and I need to move on, and that is that God can function in our dysfunction. We're all dysfunctional, but God can function in our dysfunction. And the fact is, what other choice does he have since all of us are imperfect and dysfunctional? So I told you a story about Jacob, and he comes from this messed up family. But back here, the Lord says, look at verse 3 now of chapter 31. And then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and your relatives, and I will be with you. That's God speaking to old dysfunctional Jacob. And he's in the middle of all this. Sometimes we think, oh, the world's in chaos and it's all messed up. Listen, God's in control. He's sovereign. And he's working in all of this. So he speaks to Jacob, and he says, listen, Jacob, you take your family, you go back home, and everything's gonna go all right. you read that, the Lord said, God speaks to Jacob. I want to go down to verse 22. And Laban told on the third day that Jacob had fled, was told on the third day that Jacob fled. Obviously, Jacob gathered his belongings. He left town without telling anybody. And he then took his brethren with him, and he pursued him for 7 days' journey and overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. Obviously, he wanted to kill him. At least he was going to, wanted to wring his neck. But God said to Laban, the Syrian, in a dream by night, he said, be careful what you speak to Jacob, neither good or bad. A dysfunctional family has never stopped God from functioning. And this is, I believe, a great illustration of what I'm talking about. A dysfunctional family has never stopped God from working. He's never stopped God from blessing a family. It's never stopped God working through a family, even mine and even yours. And I wish we would tell people that more often, how we've got our own warts, we've got our own issues, we've got our own problems we're dealing with and working through. We're growing up too, and they can too. They're welcome to make their mistakes and bring all their stuff with them. And listen, it's not like God said, Jacob, because you're a supplanter, you messed up, I don't want anything to do with you. Right in the middle of all of this crud, God speaks to Jacob. A perfect God works through imperfect people. A holy God works through unholy people, because there are no other kinds of people for God to use. Paul said that God has chosen the foolish things of the world. He's chosen the weak things of the world. He's chosen the base things of the world. Peter denied Jesus 3 times. Moses failed and lost his temper, wasn't allowed to enter the promised land. David, remember, failed. Anger, murder, adultery, it goes on and on and on. Abraham failed. Isaac failed. Jacob, same way. You know, when you read the New Testament even, and there are a couple of examples, but I'll just use one. But remember, Paul and Barnabas go on a mission trip. And they come back and they have this great mission trip. And Paul says, okay, I'm ready to, ready to go again. And he says, we're going to take another trip or two. And he says, okay, we're going to bring along John Mark and my nephew, and we're going to bring him with us. And Paul said, no, we're not. We're not going to have anything of it. We're not going to do it. We're not going to do that. And the Bible says there became this disagreement between them. Do you remember that? And so Paul went his own way, and Barnabas, who, by the way, is the son of encouragement, Barnabas and John Mark, they go their other way. Do you know what happened? God used them both. They went in 2 different directions, and God used both of those teams on the mission field to do great things for him. They had a disagreement. They couldn't get together. They parted ways, but God used them in all of that. In fact, I think he even doubled their efforts in all of that. All I'm saying is, listen, God reserves the right to use whoever he wants to use. He'll use people that don't even like you. Isn't that right? That's aggravating. So we think, God ought to use just the people that I like, He'll use people that we don't think should be used or ought to be used or could be used. God reserves the right to use whoever he wants to. And he can use you too. And he has used you. And so God functions even in our dysfunction. And so here's the last thing, and I'll be done. And that is growth of seeing God instead of the dysfunction. That's what happens in this. When you go back on your own and you read this story, you'll see a different Jacob. That's what jumped out at me about this text. You see the spiritual growth. I'm seeing growth, maturity, but a spiritual growth in a man who stole the birthright from his dad with his mother's help, no doubt, but now he does something different. Verse 4, Jacob does, in the midst of all this, is an amazing thing. And so Jacob sent and he called Rachel and Leah into the field of his flocks, and he said, I see your father's countenance, and it's not favorable toward it's not favorable toward me as before. But the God of my father has been with me, and you know that with all of my might I have served your father. And your father has deceived me, and he's changed my wages 10 times. But God didn't allow him. Do you see that? God didn't allow him to hurt me. And if he said, thus the speckles shall be your wages, flocks bore speckles. If he said, the streaks will be your wages, the flocks bore streaks. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given it to me. This is an incredible spiritual growth of Jacob. what I see is a guy, instead of running off, stealing a birthright, running off, he now calls these girls together and says, hey, listen, we're going to talk about this. I want you to know that I've done all I can to be good to your dad and work hard for your dad, but God is helping me, and he's helped me, and he's protected me from your dad, and your dad hasn't done me right. And they listen to him, and they say, you're right. We'll go where you go. And that's when they begin to pack up, and they leave. Verse 5, but the God of my father has been with me. I love that. Verse 7, your father changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me. So there's God's presence. There, Jacob sees God's protection. He sees almost a partnership. Verse 9, he says, so God has taken away the livestock from your father, and he's given it to me. God did all that. You didn't do that. God, he's worked all of that. And so it's the same. Jacob is wearing the same glasses that Joseph would eventually wear. When his brothers came to him, and Joseph, remember, said to him, you meant this for evil, but God, he intended all this for good. He started looking at the situation. Instead of seeing the dysfunction, he saw God in all of that. And God is in all of that, I think, in the midst of our life. And I think if we'll look, I think through the glasses, especially of providence, and pull back the divine curtain that God has, I think, in front of us, if we can just look behind it, we'll appreciate those two words, but God, but God. James Montgomery Boyce once wrote, if you understand those two words, but God, they will save your soul. And if you recall them daily and live by them, they will transform your life completely. God is never intimidated by our flaws. He's never intimidated by our failures. He can match all of that with his faithfulness. It's kind of lopsided, isn't it? You know, we think we have all of these flaws and failures, and yet God has all of this grace and all of this forgiveness. He's able to function in all of that. I think the best example of all of this, and why I use this in a gospel meeting, is because that's what was taking place on the cross. God looked at this world and saw all the sin and all the dysfunction and sent his son into this world to die on a cross so that we could come and be with him forever. He had an answer for the dysfunction. In other words, he had an answer for the sin. We don't. He does. There isn't anything we can do about it. We can't work long enough. Y'all, I can't preach enough sermons. I can't do enough kind deeds. My good works are like filthy rags in his eyes. I am totally dependent upon the grace and the goodness of God in my life. The world is dysfunctional. I'm dysfunctional. I'm the father of a dysfunctional family. And it's because of what sin has done to this world. Now I'm being molded and I'm being made in the likeness of Christ. I am not what I used to be when I got married 38 years ago. And praise God, I'm not going to hopefully be what I am today, maybe 5 years or 10 years from now. And you're growing up too. But we're still flawed. Show a little grace to yourself. Show a little forgiveness to yourself. I have found people are so quick to forgive other people, they will not forgive themselves because of choices they made or decisions they made. The morning I preached this sermon at Snellville about a year ago, there was a man that had been visiting our congregation for maybe 3 months. He was in his 60s. And as soon as I offered the invitation, that man got up and came forward and sat on the front row. And he said, Harold, I have been unfaithful. I've been a member of the church most all of my life. But I am so flawed and so messed up, and I've made so many mistakes that I have just quit even trying because I thought God could never use me. And he said, for some reason today, I want to get back in it, man. I want God to use me, and I want to ask this church to pray for me. I realized then that there was, like me, somebody that needed some encouragement, that just because you fail doesn't mean you're a failure. Just because you're flawed doesn't mean that these flaws will follow you into eternity. That's why Jesus came. That's the power of the gospel. That's the beauty of the death, burial, and resurrection. When it says in Romans 6, when we identify with him in his death, then he will identify with us in his resurrection. How beautiful is the picture of the death, burial, and the resurrection of Jesus? This man came and spoke to our congregation a couple of weeks ago, and kind of tongue-in-cheek, I don't think he realized what he was, he's used to preaching all across Africa and different continents, and he was saying a lot of times you go to baptize people, they got to get the alligators and the snakes out of the water. He says they got to run them out of the water before they go down there. And he said, you know what, we have people willing to get in that water infested with alligators to become a Christian, and people in the United States won't get into water even though it's warm and clean and doesn't even have a bug in it. And he said, it's just so available. It was just so like he had pleaded with so many people outdoors. I was doing a gospel meeting in North Georgia, and there was a man there. He's a principal of a tech school in North Georgia. And he said, Harold, what are you doing after we eat tonight? And I said, well, Kay and I are probably going to go back home. And he said, well, I was kind of hoping you'd baptize me. And I said, man, that'd be wonderful. He said, he had been talking about how many snakes were in his pond. And he said, would you baptize me in this pond? And y'all, it was a real test of my faith. And I said, I will, but right down the road, there's a church building with some water in it. And he said, Harold, I'm just kidding. I just wanted to see your reaction to that. And I wonder, it was one of those, would I get, I realize the majority of folks here have done that, like I did so many years ago. Maybe you haven't, but tonight you have an opportunity to give your life to the Lord, your imperfect life, your broken life, and let God forgive you. Let him put it back together. Let him give you a home in heaven for all eternity. Listen, only God can do that. He's the way, he's the truth, and he's the life. Be baptized tonight, raised to walk in a brand new life. And maybe some of you have given up. You don't think you got anything to offer. God can't use you because of your broken life. It's not true. It's not true. It's a lie from Satan. He has used you, and he will use you, and he can use you. Listen, God, even in your dysfunction, can keep right on functioning because he's sovereign and powerful. He is the creator of everything that we see, including us, and even the things that we do not see. He has the power to make the changes in your life and in mine, and the power to bring you home one day to heaven. Is it 255 or 355? 255. I am resolved no longer to linger. Good song to sing. Resolved. Make a commitment. Make it tonight if you want to. I'll be here at the front. Farron will be with me. If we can help you in any way, you come while we stand to sing the song of encouragement.